A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Arrow Squad. This is the 150th episode of Arrow that we're talking about, which is super exciting, and by we... Drumroll, please. I do not mean myself and the Flash. I mean myself and our special guest, Harley. Harley, say hi.
Hi.
We have Harley, also known as Jess, who is the co-host on a Legends of Tomorrow podcast, and she has come over as our special guest this week. It is truly a memorable 150th episode. Because we have all girls on the show today. How are you feeling about that, Jess?
I am feeling great about this. I'm super excited to be here, and I'm excited to do an all-girls podcast. Yay. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to be talking Arrow, because I almost never get to talk Arrow, so it's good
news. Yeah, I think that'll be exciting. I mean, our worlds are so interconnected and yet so far apart. So being on this 150th episode is really exciting and a good fit because we actually did see some Legends faces and Flash faces and other DC Universe faces pop up on this week's episode.
That's right. We sure did. And you better believe I've got something to say about it.
Well, I'm very excited to hear that. In terms of where Mr. Flash is, he is off traveling around the world, probably in celebration of the 150th episode. And he's on a beach somewhere. And we are here in our villainous cave together to talk about the Emerald Archer. Do you get it? Emerald Archer, Green Arrow. It's a little on the nose, right?
It's a lot on the nose.
That was this week's title. This week was obviously a special episode. It was the 150th episode. And they played around a bit with a little bit of a different format. We had that documentary confessional cam style situation going on. We had some familiar faces popping back up. So since we don't have any news items this week, I think we should just get into our ratings and impressions, don't you?
Yeah, I think that sounds great.
All right.
Do you want me to go first or would you like to go first?
I think we should let the guests go first. How about you tell us, out of 10, what is your rating of this week's episode?
I gave this 7.5 out of the box episodes. Mm-hmm. So I felt like it was a solid episode for the 150th. I kind of dug the documentary feel, especially in the beginning. And I really liked that we got all of the characters that they were able to bring back for this episode. And that, like you said, they kind of did it in that confessional cam style. And we got throwbacks like to season one and how they seemed to tie a lot of things all in together. I think possibly like one of the funnier ones, at least for me, was the moment with Diggle, where he gets to kind of watch how he reacted years ago, and then, you know, how he would feel today. But as far as things that kind of detracted from this episode for me, I did not at all care for the William teenage drama stuff. I'm curious a little bit as to like why he got expelled from his school and kind of what his deal is. But I just don't go all in for that like angsty teenage stuff. And I know it's the CW, but that was by far probably like my least favorite points of the episode. But I mean, you know, it was kind of unlike any of the others, the feel, because it had that documentary feel. And I really liked that they were using it to kind of explore a theme. You know, they're trying to understand, like, what does it mean to be a vigilante? Like, what is vigilantism? And what is the difference between that and being a hero? You know, is it just the mask? Like, if it is just the mask, why are they hiding? You know, it was just a really fun way for the show to kind of look at itself and kind of explore that theme a little bit. So I really liked that aspect of it.
Yeah, it was the question that they were answering, I thought, was fun in this episode, which is what is a hero? Because in other sort of seminal episodes that they've had, like the 100th episode, it really had more to do with paying tribute to their past. Mm-hmm. While there were elements of that here, I think the concept behind this was good. I rated it an 8 out of 10 as an Arrow episode and a 5.5 out of 10 as an Arrow 150th episode.
Ooh.
I know it's that there's some highs and some lows.
I hear you.
I thought as an Arrow episode was fantastic, right? There's just some elements in here that were undeniably fun. It's sort of, if you think of it as a piece of clothing, it's if you had material that was so good that even if you just made a t-shirt, it would still be expensive. That's kind of what we're working with here. We had some familiar faces we haven't seen in a while, like Thea and Sin and Ragman and all of that. That even no matter what was happening, that was still going to be pretty good for an Arrow episode. As a 150th, though, it ended up kind of lacking heart after all the boxes were checked. We see, you know, the metaphorical something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. But then
that's a good way to put it.
The wedding itself was just kind of lackluster, right? The 100th episode sort of paid tribute to the original Queen family. We saw Moira and Robert and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. But when we, in the sort of alien dream sequence, but in this episode, what I kind of expected, which was paying tribute to the future in a season where we have all these flash forwards and we have all these kids running around, you know, if we must deal with young teens, let's at least make use of them. And I thought we would pay tribute sort of to the Queen family moving forward, you know, and they're sort of a family they've built around themselves, right? We now have Oliver, Felicity, William, the Diggle family, and all of that. That's become a sort of self-selected family. Mm-hmm. And instead, we just sort of had a patchwork something for everyone, old and new characters, montage. Conceptually, it was okay. And it really was, on some level, something for everyone. I was as thrilled to see Thea and Sin as anyone else. But I just wish that those cameos were more like little bright points in an otherwise memorable episode, rather than just being the main part, the main draw, the best part of what was presented.
Yeah, and you know, I agree with you, and I think a lot of those reasons are why, like, later points in the episode that we'll dig into a little bit more in the discussion, but there's definitely some points in here that kind of like fell flat for me. And like, I almost kind of feel like if from a different perspective, the parts that actually fell flat were like the more like them trying to be an Arrow episode part. Like the villain mm-hmm. kind of like fell flat for me, or I mean, we mm-hmm. can kind of get into that, but yeah, I mean, it felt like they tried to put way too much and get a little bit of everything into it, as opposed to kind of like picking a theme or, like you said, kind of paying a tribute and kind of focusing on that for a special 150.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, we just have a little bit higher expectations, I suppose, because they do get so much good material they can work with for 150th. They brought back a lot of past creative control. They had, you know, there's a much higher budget for episodes like this. We have characters willing to come back for a bit. We have a lot of cameos of different heroes and villains we've seen before. And it's just sort of raises the bar a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear more about what you think when we get to our discussion points. But first, let's just go over really briefly some pre-show feedback that we got from our girl, Erin. I'm excited that she's written in again. Just to touch on some of the high points, she agrees with us that Black Siren saying she wants to make her father proud made her want to throw up. She wants to stop forcing that Quentin and Black Siren stuff. I am so with her. She says that's her hill to die on. She does not want Black Siren redeemed. She echoes our concern with it being potentially unfair to Beth to get saddled with Dragon this season. But she is sadly saddled with him and saddled with a lot of past angst that Erin has on other characters regarding other characters who have died and other baggage that this show comes with. So you sort of get the old and good and bad with the new and good and bad. She says she agrees with us that Felicity goes a long way in helping people, but for her, it's going to take way more than just Felicity being charming with Siren for Aaron to see Siren as good or for the redemption to feel honest and like a good choice. She agreed with some of our comments last week about Dinah and Oliver being sort of incompatible leaders, good leaders, but not for working together. And she also agrees with Flash about being a little bit meh about Curtis potentially dying. She points out there were a lot of things that got dropped for Curtis, such as this Palmer Tech chip storyline with Felicity, and she doubts that they're going to be able to pull all that back up again. So those are the high points from Aaron's feedback.
Oh, man, I must say, this is my first time experiencing the volume in person of Aaron's feedback. And I will say that it is fantastic and impressive. And
she's so good, isn't she? She's like our unseen third co-host.
I mean, really, it's so great. Like, it's always nice to hear the high points. But now I don't often get a chance to kind of go and read the in-depth comments. I think she leaves them on the website. But yeah, no, this is fantastic. And I must say, just very quickly, I completely agree with Curtis. I was very meh on him dying. But I did see your point, Cammie, of really, like, would they do that to a major character and that they shouldn't, kind of, like, in his defense. But I'm very over Curtis as well.
Yeah, I think Curtis had so much potential, and that is what would have frustrated me had he died, because it would have been their sort of attempt to cut their losses. It's such a lackluster use of a character who should have been by far and away the best character in NTA, and still actually, in my opinion, is up there insofar as Wild Dog is frustrating and Dinah is not always written to her best, but there we are. Those are who we have. And yes, now you get to see the magic that is Aaron's full post. And if anybody else is curious about the magic behind the summary, those do get posted as comments to our blog post, and they are fantastic. So if you are curious to hear more from Aaron, you can go read and respond to her there.
Awesome.
So next we're going to move into our favorite moments, which is one of my favorite parts of our Arrow Squad episode. So I'm so glad you're getting to join us for it.
Yes, I'm excited. And I think we have a little clip I'm supposed to be playing.
There it is. There's our favorite moments intro. So would you like to kick us off by telling us your favorite moment from this episode?
Sure. So what I loved the most about this episode, I think, was our classic Diggle and Oliver talk that we got. You know, I really enjoyed when the two of them kind of ditched the camera crew and Diggle was kind of basically talked Oliver into getting the team back together. Now, granted, this scene did have a few inconsistencies. I don't know if we would necessarily want to get into them right here. Like, he did say, did they really have each other's backs when Oliver was in prison? Because I'm not going to lie, I think that's a little, maybe.
It's a stretch, yeah.
It's a little, especially on his part. I appreciate the classic Diggle talk, and I loved the throwback to, like, past seasons and just him and Oliver kind of, like, coming together and, like, doing their thing. But I don't know. I wasn't sure that this was the version of Team Arrow that works that we know and love, but whatever. It had that feel that I missed, so that's why I picked it. Mm-hmm. And here it is.
You know, I know what you're gonna say, right?
I do.
Best way to stop chimeras by drawing him out?
Exactly.
Not with hundreds of people there, John.
This guy's taken down four vigilantes. He is out of the SCPD's league. Yes, he is. But not Team Arrow's.
What? No. No. There's no world in which Pollard will allow Dinah to deputize all of you. And I'm certainly not going to risk you going to prison for violating the anti-vigilante law. Come on, even if I was willing to take that risk, there is no Team Arrow anymore.
But there is. Oliver, there is. It's just changed. We may not have been Team Arrow when you were in Slapside, but we had each other's backs. It's
Give us a chance, man, to have yours.
You could go to prison.
So? You did it for us. But you never really sat right with me. And the reason why is because it wasn't right, Oliver. We have fights, disagreements, recriminations, but it doesn't matter because we are a team. And nothing's going to change that.
John, I made a lot of mistakes.
We all did. That's why they're called mistakes, Oliver. You learn from them. You move forward. We get better.
Just love the way scenes just between the two of them are so well paced. They mm-hmm. play off their dialogue back and forth so well.
They do. I think the music is a lot of what made that clip for me. It was a little longer, but you can't really cut Diggle off in the middle. So,
yeah, absolutely. I totally also agree with your comment about that being a little bit of revisionist history. They did not, in fact, have each other's backs. While Oliver was in prison, there was one person trying to get Oliver out of prison and quite a few people not consistently helping. And Diggle was among the ones not consistently helping, unfortunately, despite the fact that he's one of my favorite characters, I will admit.
Yeah, I know. As much as I love that quote, as he was saying it, I was like, eh. Really? Okay, we'll go with it.
He was like, it never really sat right with me that you went to prison for all of us. Well, buddy, you know, there were some points where you could have helped that. Anyways, fantastic scene. For mine, because I did actually love the confessional cam style that they used, I love The Office. So I thought that was really fun. It's no surprise that my favorite moment was from it. I enjoyed getting to see our heroes both shine and stutter in front of the camera and in front of an audience. And I thought Felicity's confessional, pointing out that they should be called heroes rather than vigilantes, that was really in keeping with her character. And also, it was sort of a fantastic moral of the story for this episode. So that's what I picked as my moment.
I think that's a great one. And let's hear it real quick.
You know, I kind of hate the word vigilante. It just feels like such a disrespectful term. You know, call them what they are. Heroes.
Yeah, there it is. Pretty short and sweet.
It was short and sweet, but it was a great moment. And again, the choice of the music, I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I wanted just to, as a way to prove a point when I was still feeling a little bit salty Cammy kind of returned at the end of this episode, and I was thinking through some of the missed opportunities. I wanted to point out that what I think would have been the kind of scene that would have been a really good fit for this piece was the one that I ended up picking as my favorite scene from, I think, all of season 6, where Oliver is fighting with the rest of Team Arrow a pretty big slew of villains. And it was one of the first times that we see him suited up after a while, because he had put the suit down and promised William that he wasn't going to continue being Green Arrow in the field for a while. Mm-hmm. And he suits up, you know, just sort of to save the city at the last minute. And we see this beautiful scene where we see massive violence, a beautiful soundtrack, and Felicity sort of sitting at command, talking them all through this, right? With William next to her. And it's the first time he's really seeing his dad as a hero. And she gives him this sort of short and sweet talk again about what it means to be a hero and what it means to love someone who is a hero and supporting them and how you have to believe that they're going to come back. And it was just such a wonderful, well-done scene. And it wasn't even in a finale or a mid-season finale or anything like that, but it was just so beautifully done and touched on little quotes and little moments all the way back from season 1. And that's, I think, the kind of content I was kind of hoping we would get out of this 150th, was something that was more of a nod to the connections that this team has had with each other, which have now sort of turned into family. And I think that could have gone a long way as well in terms of reconciling Oliver and Diggle, because as you pointed out, those are some of our favorite parts of these episodes in general, and certainly an episode like this. It would have been nice to have a little bit more of that homage paid to the key heroes, in addition to the little fun side moments of some of our favorite ones who haven't been around in a while.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point. And I mean, I think they were trying to do that in some ways, but again, because they were trying to do so much with this episode, I think some of those things kind of just fell a little flat. They didn't quite come off, I think, maybe the way they should have, or I mean, potentially even maybe the way they were intended. But oh man, I remember that scene. That was another one of my favorites. The way
wasn't that beautiful?
It was so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now that we're starting to discuss the episode, I think that's a good point to transition to our discussion points for this week.
All right, let's dig into it. I'm excited.
All right. So I kind of divided this week up into three main parts. The fact that it was the 150th, the villains that we had, of course, and the future that's hinted at throughout this episode. So starting with the fact that it's the 150th episode of Arrow, which is still wild to think about, we did have a new format and old faces, and we see something of a, like I mentioned, almost an homage to The Office and other confessional cam style documentary shows. What did you think of the format overall and this whole camera crew following them around?
Well, it was interesting. So it had its ups and downs for me. The thing that I loved the most about it was the way that they did the intro and in the beginning, where we were getting these confessional style cutouts and we were kind of calling back to older characters. We were going back to quote footage from season one. And mm-hmm. I really liked the way that was done. And then the feel that had, because it did to me feel like we were watching a documentary, which I guess in hindsight, if you're looking at the end of this episode, the last like 2 minutes, that's I guess kind of the point where, you know, we're actually find out we're supposed to be watching this documentary. Mm-hmm. So I liked that style of it, and especially the beginning. I was really torn. I almost picked the opening with Paul Blackthorne because I loved that was the opening. It was a good cold open. It was mm-hmm. everything that he said was perfect. But once they transition into the rest of the show, when you have the camera crew following them around and you have more of this found footage feel, it just really kind of like started to wear on me because I'm just not a fan of that style of filmmaking. And I think it's bouncy and it's choppy, and I think it can serve its purpose. But when you kind of do an extended fight scene in that style, I don't know, it was just getting to that part of it was getting to kind of be a little bit too much to me. But
yeah, I think the challenge with this format is the fact that it is supposed to add an extra layer of realism to it. Mm-hmm. We're really supposed to buy into the fact that these are people who are not normally in front of cameras, and you're getting this glimpse into their world. And when the camera moves away, you see a more realistic version of them. But because this is a superhero show and it's not strongly steeped in realism, and we often are getting asked to suspend disbelief and, you know, watch people fly off of buildings without getting hurt and just accept that that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how easy it is to mesh that with this confessional camera style where we see shaky cam footage of a fight and people looking disoriented in front of cameras. And it requires very, very careful control of your body language towards the camera, the real camera and the fake shaky cam.
Fake cameras.
Yeah, and sort of a presence of being extra guarded around it that I don't know was consistent throughout. I don't know. I don't want to cross over into a place where I'm critiquing acting or something like that, but it's it it just became a format that I'm not sure fit this show, unless they were to go to nod to another show, unless they were to go more the sort of Modern Family route, where you really are not super aware of the fact that these are documentary cameras too often throughout, except for a few nods to the fact that they're being followed once in a while, and you just expect the audience to sort of stay immersed in it. That level of requiring suspended disbelief might have been more appropriate for this, and certainly more appropriate for being able to pull emotional moments in front of the camera. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't think it's even really a critique of the acting. I think it was just maybe trying to do that style in this manner on a show like this. I don't even know if it's just that it's the genre, but I think it's almost that we're used to a certain level of production with it. And it's almost like too much of a suspension of disbelief to kind of see the stark differences in the way the characters are acting as around an actual camera, you know, when they're quote aware they're being filmed, as opposed to what we normally see. And I think it was just too big of a shift, almost in like the production value of it, which I know was the point for this style, but I feel like that was almost kind of like where I was struggling with it at points.
Yeah, I agree. With that said, of course, like you and I both said, there were some high points there and there were some fun moments that we get from this format. Mm-hmm. So switching to those positives, did you have any favorite in front of the camera moment or any favorite return of some of our ex-heroes that were integrated back into this episode?
I sure did. So I think I've talked about a number of them, but I'm just going to rattle them off real quick. Felicity, mm-hmm. of course. She's adorable, and I absolutely loved it, and so I was really happy when you picked her clip.
Thank you.
Yeah, I loved Quentin's intro. I thought that it set the stage really well, and it made the most sense for him to be the one that kind of, like, did the introduction of this whole thing when you're kind of trying to explore, you know, from start to finish, who is, you know, the Emerald Archer, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then I think Sin's confessional was just so fantastic, because I loved that she was just pointing out the fact that it takes a toll on these people to be heroes and to do what they're doing and to wear that mask and to do it day in and day out. And it's not something that you should take lightly. And of course, kind of mix in with all that, of course, we get callbacks to Sarah Lance's Black Canary, which was fun because that, you know, Sin was so integrated into that storyline. So I liked her taking kind of that perspective, because I don't think that's something that other people, and I don't know necessarily like even not from an audience perspective, but at least other people, like as in characters within the show, are don't always take that perspective. They don't always kind of consider the toll that it takes to be that type of person, to wear the mask and to put yourself before others always.
Yeah, I think of all of the heroes that were brought back for this that are not normally on our screen here in season 7, Sin's was by far and away the best one. Mm-hmm. I thought that the writing for her, the presentation of her, everything about having her back, just the reassurance that she's still around and out there, was wonderfully done. Bex Taylor-Claus is a fantastic fit for this universe. I mean, talk about someone who can absolutely embody a character and immediately make you believe in that character. Mm-hmm. She does a wonderful job. I think that is a character that would have been a wonderful fit to bring back as a recurring or regular hero when we expanded the team. And I know she's got quite a lot going on elsewhere, but that was a wonderful hero to see back. I think she did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, she did.
So were there any heroes or villains that you were hoping would show up that did not show up?
Well, sort of, because mine showed up a little bit, and I don't think we got... Did we get an actual confessional with Roy, or did we...
No, we didn't.
Okay, I didn't think so. I know we got the footage of him when he was speaking with Quentin, when he's turning himself in, saying mm-hmm. that I'm the Green Arrow to, you know, kind of save Oliver's skin at that point, but... Especially since we know Colton is already involved with this season, I really felt that was a missed opportunity to not have him come back, especially since Tia was there, which I guess could have been old footage, but still, technically. But that I thought yeah. that was a missed opportunity for sure.
I thought he would be because he's there in the flash forwards. I mean, surely he's around.
He's a series regular. He's definitely yeah. around.
Yeah. Oh, well.
But what about you?
I kind of wanted to see Reza back. Again, that really ties to how I wish this episode had really centered on this sort of new queen family that's formed. I think having her around at all for the show, with her being someone that was present in the pilot and had a very meaningful presence in the pilot, and now she's raising William, I was surprised they didn't have her around to sort of bridge that gap between what William was sharing and what Oliver was hearing. That would have been a really nice moment, I think. Because when Oliver returns home in the pilot, he's not able to communicate very easily with his parents, but Reza understands. And it's sort of insinuated that she played a very large part in raising Oliver and Thea.
Yeah. That's true.
With William returning and there being communication issues with him and, you know, he was suspended and all that, I really thought that Reza would have been a really good mediator for that, I suppose. But that would have been my wish list.
Nice.
Well, let's talk about the bad guys of this episode, our villains. So from a high level perspective, the villains for this season have been a bit all over the place. So what did you think of the presence and the plot of this episode's big bad?
Oh, yeah, I've alluded to this. This episode's villain, it was a huge miss for me.
Yeah.
I agree with you. This season, they've been completely all over the place. But especially this episode, I just didn't think it was very well developed. That, again, this kind of calls back to the fact that they were trying to do a lot of different things with this episode. So they were focusing on the documentary piece and kind of making it different there. And like that callback aspects of the history of the show and trying to get everything in there. And they just didn't get a chance to develop this villain at all. I did not connect with him. I mean... I thought he was actually supposed to be this stalker that we were seeing last week, the guy that's leaving all the notes. I thought this was who we were seeing this week. So the fact that we just kind of see this random weirdo who turns out to just be like collecting the masks.
Villain of the week, yeah.
Yeah, it was villain of the week, but I don't even know. Like, I would have rather them have brought back some sort of like, do we have like anybody recurring like that we could have had just a little bit of history with?
Slade, Merlin, anything. Yeah.
Like it just would have been better served by that. And also, like, I know that they had to have a villain come in because we needed someone to attack Oliver. We needed his team to save the day. But I think like focusing more on the mayor kind of as the villain and this anti-vigilante angle, I would have liked to have seen that almost become the big bad of the episode. Now, I know they needed, a plot device in order to get the team officially deputized or however you want to look at that. I don't know that needed to be done in this episode, though. I think that could have easily been pushed into a next week's episode, you know, and they could have maybe focused a little bit more on the mayor and the anti-vigilante angle. But I don't know. That was just me. What about you? Did you like this week's villain or are you kind of?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I liked that we didn't get too much dragon because I'm so over him. But in terms of our chimera, whatever, villain of the week situation, that not only was it boring, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
That they would have a villain for the 150th episode be someone that they referred to as a super fan or a fan.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, that's a little in poor taste, to be honest with you. And this is the second time this season they've kind of played with that concept. We had Stan in prison, who was just sort of a super fan. And the word Stan is used a lot in sort of fandom language, and it refers to a super fan or a stalker fan or whatever. And something about that is just really in poor taste. I mean, in superhero shows in general comics and so on, you do tend to have people that are very much super fans. They get very passionate. They care a lot about this. And I, for one, wasn't super steeped in the comics before this, but I acknowledge that, you know, since I've, you know, started going to conventions and meeting with people who really are super fans, I've seen people who are very well, you know, versed in these comics and are sort of super fans. And I think having, especially in a big episode like this, this concept of a fan being portrayed in such a negative light just seems, I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking it, but something about that seems just in bad taste. I don't know.
I can totally see that. I didn't immediately pick up on that, but kind of now that you say it, that has been a little bit of a theme this season. And I guess you're right. How should we really take that? I mean, I know the writer's room, they've come under a lot of fire recently from, you know, those of us that are more passionate. I mean, I'm not one to go on social media and bad talk people, whether I know them or not know them, you know, just for the sake of doing it. But I'm wondering if, I mean, maybe that's part of it. Maybe that they were kind of a little dig back at them. I don't know. Maybe we are overthinking this.
I really don't know. I would just assume for genre shows, sci-fi shows, comic book shows, you just kind of anticipate that you're going to have a passionate fan base and feel great about that. That's the good thing about creating shows that people care about. But something about this theme that we seem to be hearing this season of evil fans just feels like someone may have, you know, taken a few tweets or Instagram posts too close to heart and decided to write about it. And maybe that should have been restricted for their diary. I don't know. But that's neither here nor there. I like that we didn't get too much dragon. I didn't mind the fact that we had the classic Arrow setup of a real villain and a social villain, and the mayor was the social villain.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that I wish we had just had more of the mayor, just because I think that's more Green Arrow DNA at this point, to go more political.
Yeah.
And to have political heroes and political villains. I will say, in just sort of in keeping with my critique of the concept of how they're building villains, I love female villains, right? Mm-hmm. Villainesses. However, this show really likes to take powerful women and portray them to be cruel and evil.
Ooh, yeah.
And on one hand, I'm like, that's fantastic. I'm going to go on those ladies' sides and see you never, right? But the other hand, you know, you have Samantha Watson, you have this mayor, you had in the past Moira Queen, you have Lila, you have Amanda Waller, Isabel. There's been a good few where they're quite powerful and they turn evil, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Or resistant, or actually the original Laurel kind of almost fell into that, and then they decided that she wouldn't stand her ground against Oliver, which was unfortunate in its own way as well, right? But they really, sometimes, you know, when you have women like, maybe like Thea, Felicity, etc., who are good and powerful, but because of their connection to the rest of the heroes, can be portrayed as maybe a little bit softer or having soft spots, the show will portray them well sometimes. But when you have women that are maybe just a bit more anti-heroes or social villains, they're portrayed a bit more negatively than men are sometimes when they are in these anti-hero roles where they're just sort of resistant, in the way that for a while Walter was, or certain politicians that have had to come around to Oliver's administration that just weren't portrayed as conniving and awful the way sometimes these women are. Anyways, that's my take on the villain. So I'll let that rest in peace.
Yeah. No, I mean, you kind of have a point. They have definitely, I think, kind of pushed the mayor a little bit more into the, I don't know if evil quite, but definitely more cruel, cold-hearted. And she definitely calls herself cold-hearted, which I definitely think that that is a, I don't know that, I guess, is it considered a trope maybe? But it's definitely like a classic thing of whenever you have women leaders and women in power, the the general perception that, and I don't know that this is necessarily good or bad, but it's just kind of what has happened within society, is that you just have this general perception of women, you know, who are kind of cold and not cold-hearted, but like a kind of
unyielding.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Kind of would like almost like throw you under the bus, that kind of thing. And I think that's just kind of a societal thing at this point, which I wish we could kind of get away from, but you're right. They do have a tendency to write people in that manner. So I don't know. We'll have to see how she continues to evolve.
Yeah. In terms of just the last bit I had on villains in general, we do have the mayor, and she has this ongoing anti-vigilante crusade. Do you think that the plot point of having Star Cities, the powers that be, sort of shutting down vigilantism has run its course? Or do you think there's more that can be done with the team riding the line of helping the city that's fighting against them? How do you feel about our heroes always getting arrested, is basically what this question is.
I don't love that our heroes are always being arrested. I'm not gonna lie. But I mean, I think what it does is it kind of goes back to this general theme that we have of what does it mean to be a hero versus what does it mean to be a vigilante? What are the, you know, the differences between the two? And I think it's something that they may need to continue to just maybe tread on a little lightly. I liked how it was done this episode, but if you kind of keep harping on these things, like, you know, like you said, like the team always getting arrested, or, you know, there's always some sort of, I don't know, the mayor's always out with some sort of political move to kind of block something that they're doing. I mean, I think they just need to be careful that if they do it week after week after week, they might kind of wear it out and we'll kind of get sick of seeing it. But I do like, even if they would just take a step back and just keep exploring just the difference between truly what is a vigilante versus what is a hero, or are those truly the same thing? I mean, again, you know, back to Laurel's confessional, that one was fascinating and I absolutely liked her point. Like, if she thought that what they were doing was right, would they wouldn't need a mask? You know, would they be hiding behind a mask? So it's kind of just interesting to like see everyone's different perspectives and kind of come at it from like all the different angles, because I think there's a lot of arguments to be made for both sides, and I don't think it's always black and white. It's almost never black and white. So it's interesting to see the blending of the two, hero versus vigilante, and what does that really mean?
Yeah, that was a really good summary. I'm gonna end the villain section on that because I thought that was really well stated.
Thanks.
So in terms of looking to the future, there are two futures we see a bit of in this episode. We see William's growing friendship with Zoe, and we see the flash forwards, which in this episode were of Black Star and JJ Diggle. What did you think of the future of Team Arrow through these young people? I know you mentioned William was among your least favorite things in this episode, so I suspect I know how you may have felt about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got a couple things. So let's just start with the William thing. So yeah, I don't care for the teenage angst and all of that. And I don't even really care about the William Zoe friendship. I mean, I think that sounds like pretty terrible. And I feel for the kid, like his parents literally just like shipped him off to boarding school and, you know, they never brought him home and he doesn't really get any answers. And he's just at that age where he hates everybody and he hates his parents, but he wants to know his parents. And it's a whole thing. I mean, I feel for the kid. He's been through a lot, but it's just one of those storylines that has never resonated with me. I dreaded when they introduced William and the fact that he was going to be a main character. And really up until now, I think he's been handled well and I haven't minded his storylines. But now that William and Zoe are kind of getting their own story, and I know it ties into the future, but I just, I kind of felt like we could have done without any of that, especially in this episode.
Yeah, I just feel like with William, his storyline should have been more closely tied with his family. at this point.
Right.
I get the friendship with Zoe. I think that's cool. I know exactly where they're going with the storyline. I know why they're going to say he was expelled. I think it's unrealistic that he would have been expelled without his parents being called. But okay, mm-hmm. we'll suspend disbelief. It's a superhero show. However, I just wish we had had something like Frasia or Thea or something like that incorporated as a way to tie him back to his family rather than this extremely heavy-handed attempt to connect the Queen family and the Wild Dog family. It is extremely heavy-handed. This is the second time specifically within this Arrow universe they have tried to get Renee to hook up with a Queen sister. And now we have this out-of-nowhere friendship between William and Zoe. It's fine. I get it, but it's so obvious that they're just trying to long-term connect the Queens to Renee Ramirez, and I'm just so much more interested in the connection between the Queens and the Diggles.
Yes.
And that's really my take on it. Yes. Which, the connection between JJ and Black Star, do you think that's a connection between the Queens and the Diggles, or is that just my theory?
No, I'm with you. I 100% think that's a connection between the Queens and the Diggles. And I do have a Legends tie-in that I want to talk about. But before I get into that, so this may be your theory as well, because this may be where I heard it. But I really think that Black Star is Oliver and Felicity's daughter. So I know someone on this podcast has said that at some point. So that's where I'm going.
I have said that. Yes, I have.
Okay. Yes. So I'm with you right there. And definitely, I mean, she calls him Connor, does she not?
She calls whom Connor?
JJ.
Oh, yeah. Which is what he is in, like, the Legends future or something, right?
Exactly. So JJ Diggle is Connor Hawk, which is what ties into the Legends episode, which was Star City 2046. So I know it's not the same future that was shown in Legends. It was clearly established that that timeline has been erased and has been replaced with something else. However, I really like that we're exploring just another version kind of the future of Star City. And I like that we're kind of having some of those same nods and those same tie-ins. I mean, specifically with JJ Diggle being Connor Hawk. And then, like you said, tying him into Black Star, because we're like about 95% sure that that is Oliver and Felicity's daughter. So I'm really liking the future stuff and kind of where they're going with that. And I'm also kind of the opinion that this is a future, but not necessarily the future.
I think it's kind of a possible outcome.
Exactly. So kind of like Star City 2046, that timeline has been completely rewritten, even though we're kind of seeing some echoes of it in this incarnation. I think this is going to be another potential future, and something is going to kind of change the course. I think we're already starting to see changes to the course, because early on, did they not state that William never sees Felicity and Oliver ever again?
And they said on the island with Roy, he basically says they shipped him off to boarding school and he never saw them again. Now, he could be lying, or the future could be changed. I don't know.
Yeah. And so that was kind of what I picked up on. So he came home this episode. So that, and plus with the nod, you know, obviously us, have we seen JJ in the future prior to this?
No, not on Arrow.
I didn't think so. So that, coupled with William actually coming home from boarding school and seeing them, that is kind of what is further leading me down this path.
That we're seeing multiple possible futures or snippets into the future.
Exactly. At least a version of the future. And the fact that they were watching the entire documentary was fascinating in and of itself.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of like what they're kind of playing with on Flash, where we have a daughter trying to get to know her father because he may or may not be dead or something like that in the future. It seems like they're kind of playing with similar themes there.
Mm-hmm.
Although Black Star is anti-vigilante herself as well.
She is very, very. But there is one more thing I want to bring up before we kind of wrap up our discussion. So are you good if I do that now, or do you have points? Okay. So the one thing that I noticed throughout this whole thing is, especially now that were kind of led to believe that the documentary was produced and came out, especially because someone in the future is watching it, they unmasked every single one of our heroes, including Emiko.
Yeah.
So are we to believe that they're now all outed and everybody knows who everybody is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, as that happens present day, unless the documentary isn't released until later.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's true because they're, you know, currently filming it. So we don't know when it may or may not come out. Or maybe if, even if it does, if it was ultimately banned, maybe this was something that Black Star had, you know, had to somehow obtain a copy of that it wasn't necessarily public knowledge or whatever the reason. But I just thought that was really interesting that throughout this whole process, they filmed everyone in and out of masks and kind of, it was especially with Emiko, it was very clear she was dressed up as the Green Arrow and her face was not covered and they zoomed in on that shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, we got quite a lot of feedback this week, and I think some of our discussion points may tie into what our listeners were thinking this week as well.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump into it.
All right. I'm going to kick us off this week with an email from Christy. She writes in and says, doing a documentary style episode had the potential to go horribly wrong, but I think they pulled it off. The invasiveness and irritation of the documentary team following Team Arrow around was balanced by the satisfaction of Dickle and Dinah periodically slamming the door in their face. She has a good point. It was Dickle and Dinah always doing that. Yeah.
It was. Yeah, I did enjoy that.
She says, I enjoyed the raw footage that the show used of showing the fight scenes from their perspective. It's a miracle. None of them got injured, though. And oh my gosh, Rory, his cameo was the most exciting and surprised me since he's previously kind of shuffled off the show. She's referring to Rory / Ragman, who I thought was a fantastic character, and I wanted him to be a love interest for Curtis, and we never got that because I can't get nice things that I want. Anyways, Christy goes on to say, Barry's confessional was simply amazing, so in character, and watching him lie about knowing Oliver was hilarious. I'm happy we finally got some good Oliver and Diggle scenes again. They've been sorely missed. It seemed as if Diggle was about to tell Oliver about Diaz before Curtis interrupted. And I loved Oliver's "you met my wife" line in that scene to put Curtis in his place. Yeah, I love that too.
That was great.
She says, how great was it to see the entire team back in action? That one big fight scene really illustrated how well they can all work together. And since Dinah had to reveal herself in front of the mayor, how long before she suspects Laurel has the same power? My one negative part of this episode was William. His sour attitude when he came back from Lian Yu is not a welcome development for me. Hopefully his expulsion from school is a somewhat interesting storyline. So he came back from the boarding school in the UK. And if you remember in the flash forwards, this isn't really a spoiler. William has a bit of a coming out journey to go through. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that's the storyline they're starting right now. With him getting expelled, it probably had to do with that, and he experienced some sort of homophobia at school, which I think will be interesting to deal with. This show has not had a great history of writing for any of its gay characters, so I'm cautious but not optimistic. But I hope that they do William justice and that they do better writing for him than they have done for example, Curtis, Rory, Sarah Lance. I could go on. Anyways, Christy says, I would have thought that Diggle's son would be on the side of the vigilantes in the future. Good point. And that is the end of Christy's feedback. Thank you.
Great points.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to take our email from Kate Johnson?
Sure. All right. Kate says, hey, guys. So I want to start off by thanking you. I really appreciate the hard work and dedication you both have to do this podcast.
Aww.
I would say thank you on behalf of Martin. Okay, so I actually thought this episode was pretty good, but it simply could be that I'm a sucker for storytelling change-ups or that I wasn't feeling well, so I couldn't be as critical. Mm-hmm. I could say that for a benchmark episode, I would have wanted a little more sparkle, but for a regular episode, it was good. 8 out of 10. Like I said, really enjoyed the confessional style storytelling, but I think I would have worked better if they had committed and the whole thing was documentary style and it ended with us seeing it was Maya watching the whole time. The initial confessionals were great, and I enjoyed the old character cameos. I even liked the Barry cameo. The poor boy was trying so hard to lie. Barry was great. Oh, I liked all of those confessionals. They were so good. But She goes on, I do feel like there were parts of this episode that were trying to explain some of the Diggle tension, and I appreciate the effort, but it felt like it was written by someone who had only known half of his storyline for this season. Yeah, so that's kind of what I would say. I nearly lost it when he said they had all been there for each other. Did he just forget that he left Felicity, a woman who was at one time a sister to him, to suffer alone for months? However, this episode did make me realize, because it was written by the old team, that Diggle was the one character that the old team wrote better than the new team. I am officially done with Curtis. I may only be an 18-year-old who has never worked for a top-secret government agency, but I know that I shouldn't spill the beans of secret surveillance technology. I feel like that should be self-explanatory. At least the other characters that are the goofy talkative kind are aware enough to try to keep a secret. He is supposed to be a genius. In fact, I may actually like Renee over Curtis, because even though Renee is a real jerk and was incredibly annoying in this episode, he at least serves some purpose. The only good thing about Curtis this time was a scene where Oliver reminded him he's married to Felicity, because that was hilarious. I thought it was also obvious that it was the other team writing this episode because they didn't have that much character development. It did serve to push some plot points forward, which is nice, but I don't understand the lack of Felicity when this should have been an episode focused on OTA. I did enjoy her scenes with William, and I could appreciate them more once we understood there was a reason other than resenting his father's choices. I also liked that she had a small return to Overwatch. I had missed that. That's true, I had missed that too.
Mm-hmm.
I actually liked the flash forward this time. It was short and sweet, but it gave us a lot of clues. My prediction is that this is an alternate future, and we won't see it resolve until the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. I think it will be the future reality if Oliver dies, and the world grows to resent the heroes that have tried to protect it. Kind of like they have grown dependent on their service, but once they are gone, crime overtakes the world, and people blame them for everything that happens. So when vigilantes try to return, everyone fears the possible outcome if they lost this generation of our heroes. This episode wasn't bad, and there weren't many big critiques I could give it, hence my rating, but it also had the potential to be so much more. There's a lot of potential for where this could go. I just hope they do everything they possibly can with it. Kate.
That was such a good point there at the end about this episode wasn't necessarily on paper bad. It's just the potential, the moments that we were kind of hoping for weren't all there.
Yeah, and I agree with that as well. I think it kind of reflects in all of our ratings.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a voicemail from our favorite Jeff, X-Force 11.
We sure do, and here he is.
Hello, Aero Squad. It's Jeff, X-Force 11, and man, oh man, what an episode. I mean, I still think the mayor is shady as all get out, and that she used this vigilante chimera to kind of force the vigilantes, so-called, out into the open. But, man, I love Team Arrow working together again. I really liked Felicity kind of digging in to William's reasons for his angriness and being a real mom that way. I love the end scene. I love the tags to the past of seeing different masks and interviews and the whole documentary style filmmaking. Man, it was just a great episode of Arrow. And so
Man, if I was to have to rate it, I'd probably get it like an 8.5, maybe even a 9. I'm excited about what they're doing and can't wait to see more. All right, X-Force 11 out.
It is so good to hear from him again, and it is good to hear from him on such positive circumstances that he loved this episode.
Absolutely. He's a little bit higher than I think the rest of us, but that's good. We need everyone across the board to kind of, you know, give their honest opinions.
Mm-hmm. So the next email that we have is from Carrie Johnson. He writes in and he says, first off, let me just say, I really love the opening. He's with you, Harley. He agrees. He says, using a documentary as a narrative device was an effective storytelling tool, and it gave a legitimate reason to bring us faces from Arrow's past that we missed, such as Thea, Quentin, Sarah, Rory, et al. My favorite direct-to-camera doc moment was Sin. Bex Taylor Claus was so vulnerable and raw in that moment, and when she said, quote, I owe them a lot, but I saw the toll it took on them. People like to debate about the legalities, but for the people wearing the masks, it's not philosophical, it's real, and it takes everything from them.
He's right there with me.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I love that moment so much. He says the doc style added a bit of realism to the story, and as such, it made me really think about the sacrifices that these heroes have made in their crusade and what it's cost them. Taylor Claus's delivery, to me, really drove that home. I absolutely agree.
Oh, yeah.
He says, however, the actual episode story was a bit underwhelming. We saw William portrayed as a whiny teenager when we've seen his character move beyond that.
Thank you.
He also says, also, I don't recall them explaining how this villain of the week was able to acquire such advanced armor and tech. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but they did name drop Wayne Technologies or something, right?
They did. Yeah.
He says, certainly it can be waved away by TV logic, but if you ignore the episode's documentary-style realism, it's hard to ignore that fact. I also had an issue with the premise of the villain, a vigilante fan who attacked vigilantes to essentially acquire trophies. As a result, it's not hard to believe that the writer/director of this episode has damaging views of fans. It's not just me. Carrie agrees.
You're right.
Listen, bro, whoever was in charge of this episode, I know we had Glenn Winter directing, Mark Guggenheim in charge. I guess it was probably Guggenheim who wrote this episode. Mm. You can be sad about angry people without having your villains be fans. There's a happy medium. Okay, that's all. Moving on. Carrie says, I did find it nice that they had a direct through line between the current and future storyline, revealing that Black Star was viewing the quote-unquote propaganda doc. Speaking of the doc, was there ever any clear discussion that Dinah and Oliver had with the crew about parameters? Certainly Oliver was comfortable exposing himself, but was the rest of the team? Was Emiko? The doctor? The documentary uncovered a lot of secrets. It's a moot point because the entire team was deputized and outed as vigilantes, but it'll be interesting to see those ramifications. Also, yes. There's the issue of Barry in the documentary. It shouldn't take too much deduction to realize that some random CSI from Central City who is buddies with all of the Star City vigilantes could very well be Central City's Flash. Of course, doesn't everyone know Barry is the Flash? I know. Good point. A long story short, I love that they brought back key people. I loved Kelsey Grammer in narration. But taking those things away, it was hard not to notice that the episode villain was underwhelming and there were some disturbing character choices. For example, whiny William, Renee seemed to be a bit off, and I totally dropped my jaw when Diggle said the team had each other's backs when Ollie was in jail. Hashtag not true. Good point. Something tells me they brought the team back just so it will be obliterated when Diggle and Lila reveal to Oliver and Felicity that they've been working with Diaz. Unless this Dante person turns out to be the devil himself, I can't see that relationship surviving that revelation. Can't wait till next week. Well, as always, Carrie has fantastic points. I thought a really good one he pointed out was that Renee seemed off. Renee seemed like he was written by the same person who wrote Renee in season 6, which is true, which is in fact very off. In fact, the worst version of Renee. So I am happy to anticipate that we will return to season 7 version of Renee next episode.
Yes, I agree. I agree with pretty much everything that Carrie said, because I said a lot of the same things.
Absolutely.
So many good points.
Well, next we have a voicemail from our favorite Miss Destiny Dazzler.
We sure do.
Hi, Hero Squad. It's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I really loved it a lot. I thought I was watching the wrong thing at first because of the way it started, like a Warner Brothers movie. I loved all the cameos in this episode. I think my favorite had to be Fia, though. I miss her a lot. So it was cool to see her and everybody else in this episode. I'm really interested to see how this William storyline plays out with him being expelled from school and where all of this goes. I kind of have a feeling that Renee and Emiko are going to end up together. When he came to check on her after she got hurt, it just seemed like there was some chemistry there. So I think that that's going to be interesting. I think it's awesome that the entire team is going to be deputized now and be a part of the SCPD. I'm interested to see what's going on in the future and how we ended up to where we are in the future. So I'm just interested to see how all these storylines play out. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
I'm happy to hear she enjoyed it as well.
Oh, absolutely. I always enjoy hearing her thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got an email from Stormy Woods left, and we've got an email from I'm Just Here For Felicity left. Would you like to pick one and I'll read the other?
Sure. I can jump in with Stormy since you did the last one. So
sure.
All right. She says, I'll give this episode a 7 out of 10. It was great having Glenn Winter back directing Arrow. He's one of my favorite directors from this show. I was super excited for this 150th show, and I wanted it to be better than the 100th, which was part of my least favorite crossover with the aliens. In the end, it was better, but I felt super bummed about certain things. My major gripe for this episode was Felicity wasn't involved in most of it. Given who wrote it, I shouldn't be shocked. This is the second episode he's written this season, and Felicity was sidelined in both of them. At this point, this feels intentional and personal against Emily. Maybe Guggenheim is still mad at her for standing up publicly against his less-than-smart comments during the Kreisberg firing.
Stormy's coming in with the receipts. Wow. If you don't know what she's talking about, I suppose Google it.
yeah, I should probably just Google that. the little that we did have of Felicity, especially her William scenes, were good. William was giving major attitude, expressing anger, and I understand where it's coming from. The kid has been through so much in such a short amount of time, and he is understandably reeling from it. Not to mention he has the added stress of his parents being in constant danger, plus his problems at school. Oliver and Felicity need to sit William down and really have a talk with him so he can tell them what's going on. Since William's sexuality was hinted at with Zoe, and we know he's out in the future, I think his expulsion has to do with that. I'm so ready for the emotional scenes of William telling his parents he's gay. He's, like a lot of kids, is probably scared, but I know his parents will love him no matter what. Yeah, I think that one's going to have, I think it's got a lot of good potential with that storyline and tackling a big issue, but I am kind of with you in that I hope it's treated
well. Done well. Yeah.
So if it's not, maybe we can just boot them over to Legends where they treat their characters right.
Oh, good point.
Anyway, she continues. It was so nice seeing Thea, Rory, and Sin again. It just made me miss them and want them back. I miss being invested in the side characters because I just can't get there with NTA. If I'm being honest, I would trade all of NTA for Thea and Rory back on this show. I kind of would too. Speaking of NTA, Renee reverted back to the smug, self-righteous jerk he was in seasons past, just when I was able to tolerate him. I was liking seeing Oliver and Diggle back working together, and then Dig ruined it by lying. The team didn't have each other's backs because, John, you all left Felicity to fend for herself in her mission to get Diaz and get Oliver out of prison. It looks like that will be swept under the rug, and Oliver will never find out how alone Felicity was. I want back Diggle, and one of his best friendships was Felicity, yet the show keeps undervaluing that bond. Emily and David have been fans of it and wanted more for years, so just do it, writers. While we are at it, give Dig more backstory, like his parents. It's been 7 seasons.
Good point.
Kind of good points. Two more things before I talk the flash forward at the end. Oliver took the film crew to the Lair Diaz destroyed and said they were going to rebuild it, but better. That makes me happy, and I can't wait to have the Lair back. Felicity's other scene was with the film crew, and she was telling them to call them vigilantes, what they are, heroes. Mm-hmm. Felicity was the first one to believe in Oliver and call him a hero all the way back in season 1 when she was putting his mask on for the first time. Oliver Queen is a damaged man who wouldn't be with his trauma, but the Oliver I've watched for 7 years loves his family, fiercely fighting like hell for them and his city. At the end of this show, I'll be thankful for the years I've watched Oliver, Felicity, and Dig's journey, plus the real-life friendships with fellow fans. One last thing. Sorry, this is super long. It's okay. I'm back to thinking Maya is the daughter of Oliver and Felicity. We see her watching a video of Oliver, and she's working with J.J. Diggle. If this show does spin off, what better way than the kids of our beloved heroes? Add in William, who is more tech-based like Felicity, with J.J. and Maya as fighters. Next generation, OTA. As for Maya being anti-vigilante, I could understand that if Oliver dies sacrificing himself for Barry in the crossover. I don't want Oliver to die, but it seems to be leading there, so fingers crossed Barry brings him back somehow. Interesting.
Yeah. I love Stormy's long feedback. Never need to apologize for writing in long feedback, Stormy.
No, she always has such good points, too. So. Mm-hmm. Enjoy her perspective.
Yeah, I do, too. Well, our last email is from I'm Just Here for Felicity, and she says, except for Diaz, who, to be fair, had a fair debate, I just don't like the messenger, in the opening, this start was amazing. This totally feels like Warner Brothers making Arrow the movie with Steven without actually going theater scale. They used logic in asking for William to be edited out so people don't know who he is for safety reasons, and they had great guests like Bex Taylor Claus back. Yeah, it seems like everybody else was on board with her too. They said, I do wonder how they got Sarah to be in this, though, because you'd think she'd be too busy hopping through time to record an interview.
You'd think.
They said that Renee being useless 24/7, how dare you talk to Felicity like that, William? Moody teen doesn't look good on him. I do not appreciate the level of disrespect Felicity's getting in this episode. Just because she's busy being a parent of the year for this group doesn't mean she couldn't out-hack you, Curtis. Also, why is Barry here? I get talking to Curtis because he came into the station, but Barry feels random and like a nod versus being organic to research that they might have done. If they're going to talk to him, who else random are they going to talk to about Oliver just because they're his friends? I feel he could have been left out of this. Shouldn't he be watching his kid and stopping his own bad guy instead of doing promotions for Oliver? Wow, Barry. Kara. Wow, Barry is Kara level bad at lying. Is this the season of outings for this show? Because they now have Renee's face on tape, which puts Zoe in danger, and Emiko's, so now people know she's the Arrow if it comes out. Stop acting like a kid, Renee and Dinah. Stop babysitting her and do your actual job. Also, could he be more cliche with that gun cleaning comment? Also, Dinah in that suit. Hot! I'm pretty sure Mr. Martin will agree with you there. She goes on to say, whose back does Diggle think he's had all season? Because it wasn't Felicity's. She had to beg him for help half the time, even if he did. And why is Diggle in his Spartan suit again? They outed him as working for Argus. So does he need a suit to be there? Can't he just go in uniform?
I thought he did just go in uniform.
Yeah. Those are good questions, though, if Diggle's plotline made sense this season.
That's true. I thought he was in his Argus uniform, though. Maybe that was just...
He was at one point in the interview, yeah.
Okay.
She says, I see we're back to gratuitous explosions for the sake of explosions now. Metal doesn't explode, action team. And couldn't have Dinah pushed the mayor out of the way instead of showing off her cry? Much like Diggle's suit, felt unnecessary for the situation. I agree. She says, I love sassy Laurel too. And more Mama Felicity, please, as long as they remember her being a mom isn't all there is to her now. I didn't like the mayor deputizing the others at the end. So it felt like a really easy way to have everything go back to the way it was. Also, Diggle and Curtis shouldn't need it because they work for Argus and had been there out of their suits and claimed they were there as part of an opt looking for the guy. Also, moments like that took this episode down points for me. She says, Cammy, can we go back to your theory that Black Star is an Elicity kid and maybe say Oliver died / disappeared when Felicity was pregnant with her, so no one but she and her know that she's William's sister? They do love doing surprise siblings. I will happily go back to that theory, yes. She says, the episode started off great, but fizzled at the end with weird decisions for characters. Still, overall, a 7.3. Well, thank you. I enjoyed that feedback as well.
I did too. Lots of good points. Lots of good points. So,
and finally, we have a voicemail from our favorite green butterfly.
Here she is to close us out.
Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky green butterfly. That was a fascinating episode. I was completely confused when the Warner Brothers logo came up and wondered if Arrow was taking a week off and CW was playing a movie in its stead. When I realized what was going on, I was intrigued because I do believe that if Oliver Queen was a real person, somebody would be wanting to do a documentary on him. I think they made the right decision, Felicity and Oliver, by keeping William at the boarding school for Christmas, but I just knew there would be emotional fallout because of it. So William's been expelled from school. Oliver was truly a party boy, but I don't really see William as that. So I think if he got expelled from school, it's probably due to hacking or some computer-related crime. That seems more up his alley. Still completely wrapped up in the storyline being presented in the flash-forwards. And yay, we finally get a little bit more Mia. I've been waiting and waiting for that. And her friend's name is Connor. I feel like long ago we were told that Oliver had a son named Connor in the comics. And we still don't really know what's going on with Oliver in the flash-forwards. In season one of Legends of Tomorrow, we were treated to Star City 2046, in which we meet a completely defeated, one-armed Oliver. So I wonder if the flash-forwards are in 2046, and that Oliver exists there. Or did the deal that Oliver made with the Monitor in the crossover change his future so he won't become that one-armed Oliver in 2046? Or are we perhaps in 2049, a year that I think we'll start exploring on The Flash pretty soon? I have so many questions. This episode gets 10 out of 10. So fun to see familiar faces. I gotta go try to construct a timeline. Have a super week. Green Butterfly out.
Oh, what a good way to end on a 10 out of 10 from Green Butterfly.
I know, she always brings the positivity, but I'm hoping maybe my comments on the Star City 2046 may shed a little bit of light on some of her questions. But she did bring up a good point. Do we officially know the year of our future or no? I don't think we do we?
I don't think we do, no.
I think it's a safe bet that it's in 2040 something.
Mm-hmm. But probably so. Maybe right before, right after.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what year they end up going with. I'd be very curious to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harley, thank you for joining us this week and being our stand-in for Mr. Flash.
Absolutely.
I think that this was a fantastic special Arrow Squad for a special 150th episode.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just, you know, happy to be on. I always love to come and chat Arrow. It's not something I get to do very often, and I also am on hiatus for Legends until April, so it was nice to get back behind the mic. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime. And if our listeners want to find you or find more of your Legends stuff or chat with you, where can they do so?
Absolutely. If they want to find me and Martin, they can come and listen to Tomorrow's Legends. And that is our Legends of Tomorrow podcast. Probably the easiest place to find us is on Twitter for that particular one. It's at Tomorrow's Legends, but with one R. You can find me personally on Twitter at Jess in Atlanta. And other than that, yeah, I'm on hiatus until April, so I'm not really doing anything other than being a feedbacker until then. So,
well, we are so happy you could join us, and I had a lot of fun, and I'm sure we did Mr. Martin proud.
I sure hope so.
Okay, so our next episode will be Monday, February 11th. Which is entitled Star City Slayer. That's episode 13 of season 7.
Ooh, that sounds intriguing. I guess we're going to find, are we finally going to get this stalker serial killer, I guess, that they've been hinting at for a few episodes?
I'm guessing we'll get to hear more about him. And if you have any comments or questions or theories or just want to get in contact with any of the rest of us from Arrow Squad, you can go to arrowsquad.com. We also have Martins on Twitter, CyberTiger17, and I'm Cammy on every social media that's pretty much existed since MySpace, at Cammy and Ray. And that is Arrow Squad for this week. Thank you for joining us for our discussion of the Emerald Hunter, episode 150. Same place next week. Next week we'll have Martin back from his beach. We're celebrating 150th episode somewhere.
I know. It sounds like he's having lots of fun. And thanks again to both of you for letting me come on the podcast. I've had a blast, so we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Would you like to say goodbye to our listeners?
Sure. Goodbye. This is Harley. I'm signing out.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.